10 years ago, I was a sports reporter for the Daily Express. Every Saturday, I would cover a football match at the likes of Birmingham City, Crystal Palace, Watford, Walsall, or Yeovil Town. The stadiums were often the best part of 100 years old and found in a working-class area of town. I thought back to those days last Saturday as I drove to a match between Kaizer Chiefs and Orlando Pirates in Soweto, Johannesburg. It was a journey past squat but proud red brick houses, spaza shops with Coca-Cola-sponsored signs for Pete's Cafe or Sally's Fish and Chips, and rubbish skips spilling their contents into wastelands where men evidently thought nothing of taking a leak. Men and women in smart suits and dresses queued patiently outside a white marquee for food after attending a funeral. A little girl performed a handstand in the street. An elderly man waited to cross the road, while an elderly woman looked out from her driveway, each with long histories etched on their faces. A comedian on the back of a pickup truck shouted to passing women, "Hey, look at me! I think you're beautiful! I miss you!" Match day is match day, wherever you are in the world. I was forced to slow down as the traffic snarled up towards the ground. Many of the vehicles bore flags or pennants, yellow and black for the Chiefs, a white skull and crossbones on black for the Pirates. There was the same sense of communal pilgrimage, as ritualized as church, and of shared faith that what we're about to watch really matters. Outside the Orlando Stadium, there were market stalls selling hats, shirts, banners, compilation CDs of fans' songs, and local food specialities, including vleis, pap, and mopani worms. Supporters wore colourful face paint, wigs, giant goofy glasses, and costumes including traditional Zulu robes. The most popular headgear was the makarapa, a variation on the miner's helmet, topped by elaborate decorations. A man grinned at me and crossed his wrists as if showing me handcuffs. Then I realized he was merely imitating the Pirates' skull and crossbones. The Chiefs and Pirates are supposedly among Africa's fiercest rivals, but the fans mixed freely in unreserved seating. It was not like the sharp divisions of an English ground, with its steel barriers, phalanxes of stewards, and sea of arms raised in obscene gestures. There was some mildly irritating hectoring between rival supporters, but it never seemed likely to turn nasty. "I hate the tribalism of English football," said a friend. "You don't get violence at South African games. They have enough outside." But I did miss the English fans' caustic humour, self-deprecating asides, and songs passed on from fathers to sons. Instead, the South Africans blew their vuvuzelas, long plastic horns which collectively make a sound like a million angry bees. I confidently predict this, not crime or lack of transport, will be the first international controversy at next year's World Cup. In South Africa, football, unlike the other colonial games, cricket and rugby, has long been played mainly by blacks. It became woven into community culture, just as in working-class Victorian England, and gained such mass popularity in townships that it was inevitably aligned with political resistance. Orlando Pirates, born in 1937, became a rallying point of social solidarity and self-worth. In 1951, non-whites formed the South African Soccer Federation, which opposed apartheid in sport. Meanwhile, numerous former English and Scottish internationals played in South Africa in the 70s. The long-forgotten Cape Town City boasted Mick Shannon, Kevin Keegan, Francis Lee, Frank McClintock, and Jeff Hurst, who, along with being the first player to score a World Cup final hat-trick, is also said to be the first white goal scorer in Soweto. Last week I met Terry Payne, the former Southampton and England striker who moved to South Africa 25 years ago and now works as a TV commentator. He recalled coming here on tour in the 70s. "We played in Soweto," he said. "It was a very different place then, I can tell you." Kaizer Chiefs versus Orlando Pirates is billed as one of football's great duels, ranking alongside Barcelona versus Real Madrid, Celtic versus Rangers, and Boca Juniors versus River Plate. Deputy President Cloinga Motlanthe was among the 40,000 sell-out crowd last weekend for the first Soweto derby to be played at Orlando, dubbed the spiritual home of South African football for more than a quarter of a century. In fact, it was fairly dire, with countless unforced errors, woeful finishing, and a distinct lack of pace or purpose on a badly kept pitch. Kickoff was delayed by 15 minutes because of a dispute over the Chiefs' goalkeeper wearing a jersey that was too close in colour to the Pirates' strip. The Chiefs hit the post with 5 seconds left and had to settle for a goalless draw. Both sides would struggle, even in the English lower divisions, but often local derbies are vicious, precisely because the stakes are so small. The miserable form of the South African national team is now causing alarm for the World Cup organisers. 8 defeats in 9 matches led to the sacking last month of their Brazilian coach, Joel Santana, and the reappointment of former coach Carlos Pereira. South Africa are ranked 85th in the world, behind Togo, Uzbekistan, El Salvador, New Zealand and Mozambique. An early exit for Bafana Bafana will potentially undo 15 years' work that has gone into making the World Cup a feel-good feast for the nation. As I joined the throng leaving Orlando Stadium, my mobile phone beeped. It was a text message from my dad. 17 Mins, Stoke 1, Wolves 0. We're both Wolves supporters, and the scoreline delivered a mild and all-too-familiar sting. I've seen games at Wembley and West Bromwich, in Paris and Vienna, in Rio and Soweto. But for me, as for any fan, there's only one result that really matters.